Can't wait.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
It was a good game. Both teams play hard.
With no regard for human life.
To all the non-believers, all we hear is about their defense. They can't stop a nosebleed.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Not the game that I go out there and die for.
This is grown man B.I.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Relax and take notes.
Hello and welcome to Can't Wait, where we are in, what is this, part three, we'll call it, of our NBA preview extravaganza. We have knocked out the first seven teams of the National Basketball Association. With me, as always, Matt Milner.
How's it going, Nick?
We're going to go through eight more teams in two parts today. We'll do the Nuggets, the Pistons, the Warriors, and the Rockets. Take a little bit of a breather. Finish up with the Pacers, Lakers, Clippers, Grizzlies.
Perfect.
Sound good?
Sounds good.
We've got the Denver Nuggets up first. And whether or not we win more games, this is going to be a better season than last year. No question. Mm-hmm. Ty Lawson, our most talented player, is gone, mm-hmm. which is usually a sign of some other horrible things. And yeah, that's what happened. Last year was horrible, and it was bleak, and it was, I would say, the worst time I've had rooting for this team since the pre-Carmelo Anthony days.
Ooh.
That was a rough one. I mean, yeah. We bring in Brian Shaw, and he's supposed to be this defensive guru type of coach, and we're one of the worst defensive teams in the league.
Mm-hmm.
We're also as bad as those Pacers teams were offensively, but without Paul George to bail us out.
Right.
I mean, it was so bad and so lackluster, and even our rock and home crowds were just over it, just not into it.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what happens this year, it's going to be better, because I feel like we're heading in a direction. What do you think? Because I'm a little close to the team right
sure.
now. You look at this from a little more of a impartial viewpoint. What do you see?
I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, this team has less talent than they did last year, but more of an identity. I mean, going into last season, it was really unclear. What was their goal? What were they trying to accomplish? Were they trying to make the playoffs?
Right.
Were they rebuilding? They were kind of stuck in limbo. And it's really amazing, even though there's really not that much roster turnover, just the Lawson deal alone and the change in coach,
mm-hmm.
and seemingly a recognition over the offseason that, you know, this is a team that is not going to go into 76ers mode and like try to tear down completely.
Right. The Kroenkes don't have the stomach for it.
Right, right. But they know that the team that they rolled with last year was not going to be able to do anything interesting. So they want to, you know, figure out who are the guys that we're building around. You've got, you know, coming into this season, you already know that Nurkic is a player.
Yes, we all love Yusuf Nurkic.
Yeah, and last year, I mean, this time last year, mostly what we knew about him is he had a really cool dad.
Yes.
He had this you know, monster of a man.
A Coen Brothers character for a father.
A Coen Brothers character who's, you know, he's like a Bosnian police officer or something like that. But anyway, I mean, he had a very nice season for a 20-year-old big man.
Way further ahead than we expected him to be.
Yeah, and I don't know, I mean, what do you see, realistically, what do you think his long-term role on this team is? I mean, is he a foundational player you build around, or is he a nice center that you're happy to have who in today's NBA, you know, is able to be a quality starting center, you know, a Marcin Gortat level center?
I think what he can bring is, you know how you either have the center like Omer Asik, who's all defense, or you have that Gortat center who can only score.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can do a little of both.
Mm.
I think he profiles as an excellent defensive player. You know, last year it was up and down, because that's what rookies are. They're
sure.
up and down defensively.
And a 20-year-old rookie who was, you know, coming from a very different environment.
Yeah, and somebody that when we drafted him, we were thinking that's a draft and stash for a year or two.
Yeah.
He came over earlier than expected and performed well earlier than expected too, because Brian Shaw didn't really want to play him. Mm-hmm. He was just better than the guys in front of him. He had no choice.
Right.
So I was really encouraged by what I saw from him. I think he's got really soft hands. Mm-hmm. I think he's really good around the rim. Mm-hmm. There's enough touch there to where it feels like he can knock down 17, 18 footers on a pick and pop a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't. He'll never be a 3-point shooter.
Sure.
Obviously. But he's gonna shoot okay from the line.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be able to guard guys on the pick and roll. There were a couple times he was able to pick up guards in space and really stay in front of them.
Yeah.
He's a nice rim protector. He's an excellent rebounder. So I think when I see him as a better version of when we had Timofey Mozgov.
Mm.
I think he's better at all the things that Mozgov is good at.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see him Mark Gasol-ing it. You
sure.
know what I mean? Like
right.
He doesn't have that passing ability. He doesn't have that. He just doesn't have that knack for the game. But it's also, he's young. So we get really excited when we talk about Nurkic. But I think he is a quality starting center who, if there's like a down year or an injury, could maybe sniff the All-Star game.
When I look at him, and some of this is just stereotype because, you know, we tend to group players together based on what they look like
yeah.
or what we think about the
vibe.
Yeah, the
right.
vibe. I think that, you know, there are a lot of things that remind me of a better, you know, more defensive-oriented Pekovic
yeah.
in terms of being a big bruiser, super strong guy who's surprisingly nimble, has a softer touch than
yes.
you think, has a few moves, you know, is not just a guy who has to muscle through, get down into layup range. I mean, he's got moves, he's got some counter moves.
If he's Pekovic offensively and Ashik defensively,
then that's a very nice player.
That's probably a max guy.
Yeah, and you know, the key will be, can he be Ashik defensively, and can he leverage the fact that he is a little bit more agile into being someone who is less of a liability on the pick and roll?
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, you obviously watched more Nuggets games than I did last
yeah.
year. Do you see that being a part of his game that that can develop at
some
honestly, point?
I honestly think it's a strength.
Okay.
I think that his feet are way better than they should be.
Hmm.
And his hands are better than they should be.
Yeah.
What you worry about with him is he gets in foul trouble because he's over-aggressive.
Sure. Yeah.
And so you would have these stretches where it seemed like he could never get in any kind of rhythm because two fouls and to be pulled out.
Right.
So if he can figure out how to position himself intelligently, because I feel like all the physical attributes are where you want him to be. I have to temper my enthusiasm because there are times where he's out there and it looks like, oh, it's Marc Gasol. We're set at center for 15 years.
Right.
But honestly, I really do think that he is going to be a lot more mobile defensively than he looks.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a major asset. Can he do this for 32, 34 minutes a game? That's the thing. We don't know that yet. We don't know if he has the stamina for it. We don't know if he has the mentality for it. But we know if he's in there for like 20 to 25 minutes a game, he's just going to go in there and knock heads and do things.
Yeah.
And so I do feel like he's somebody you build around, though.
And one of the things I liked about this offseason is that, you know, again, they recognized that this is not a team that is built to try to become the
right.
seventh or eighth seed this year. They, you know, didn't go out and, you know, try to make sort of win now type moves at the detriment of their future. You know, you can argue that the Ty Lawson deal, that they didn't get enough back, that they should have made the deal earlier.
They got a little greedy because of what they got from Mozgov.
Right.
And I don't know if Tim Connelly realized that the Mozgov thing was situationally incredible.
Yeah.
And so we were holding out for this ransom for Ty Lawson because, you know, he's got this rep around the league. He's Ty Lawson. He's
right.
the fastest guy with the basketball.
Right.
So when it came time that we had to trade him and we had no leverage and no team other than the Rockets really with a spot open for him,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we could have maybe gotten the Kings involved before they made the Rondo deal because George Karl loves Ty Lawson and Vivek loves making crazy trades. And
right.
we had all these, I had like these three-way trades where we got Markieff Morris back, you know?
Right.
I was conjuring all these great things that we could get for Ty Lawson, but at the time, I mean, once it got down to it, we got just scraps.
And part of it was, you know, not only did they get a little greedy, but, you know, you're rolling the dice when you're keeping a guy around who has off-the-court issues
yes.
and has already, you know, his value was already lower because of some of that behavior. Then they just had bad timing. That, yes, you know, he had that the, you know, it was a DUI, right?
Mm-hmm. Or the second DUI.
Second DUI.
And that Instagram video with the hookah and I love to play in Dallas, and, you know, calling up James Harden, like, get me over there. And, right, you know, I mean, he'd burnt all the bridges. We had to get rid of him. And that's not a position you want to start making deals from.
Yeah. But you know what? The deal's done. And he's gone. And they drafted, I know, one of your favorite players in the draft.
So excited
in
right
Moutier.
Now to talk about Emmanuel Moutier.
And you know what? He's not, I think that they're going to bring him along slowly. But again, there's a plan. You can see the pieces in place. They did some very savvy extensions as well.
I love what they did this offseason.
And tell us a little bit about it, because that's kind of unusual. So you don't see those transactions happening in the NBA all that often for these kinds of players. And some of it is the reality of the way that the CBA works. But what were the extensions that
they extended Wilson Chandler, who's a guy that we've had on the trading block for seemingly 5 years now.
Right.
But he's a good player when he's in there. He's one of these Swiss Army knife, you know. The game is evolving toward Wilson Chandler as this 6'8", 6'9" guy that can handle the ball, shoot threes, defend a lot of positions, and he just plays smart basketball when he doesn't think he needs to be taking 7 threes a night.
Right.
I really like his game, and the only thing with him is it's injuries.
Yeah.
I know that the Grizzlies made a call when they were after they settled for Jeff Green.
Mm.
I think they first wanted Wilson Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
But we were able to ink him to like this mid-level kind of $8 million a year kind of a deal, which is going to look so good when this cap explodes.
Yeah.
We did the same thing with Danilo Gallinari, who I don't know if people realize how good Gallinari was the last 2 months of the season, because who cares? Who wants to watch the Nuggets the last 2 months of the season? He was among the most efficient, just dominant scorers during that stretch. It looked like pre-knee injury Gallinari. This was a guy that was scoring in all different ways. I don't know if you read the thing Zach Lowe wrote about him on Grantland, where he placed in the top 10 in every offensive scenario that you can handle the ball.
That's amazing.
Yeah, those last 2 months, he was a top 10 in efficiency in the pick and roll. He was top 10 catch and shoot. He was top 10 isolation. You know, just anything that you could put him in offensively, he was scoring.
Wow.
And this is a guy you just want to have around.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did, instead of having to try to just collect talent, They emphasize guys who want to be in Denver. Gallinari loves it in Denver.
Yeah.
Chandler loves it in Denver. And then they went and got some character guys. I think they really like having Jameer Nelson around in the locker room. Whether or not he's going to play, you know, 30 minutes in the game and block Moutier, I don't think that's the plan. I think it's just having him around.
Yeah.
They went and got Mike Miller just to have him around.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know if the Cavs, you know, LeBron demands that Mike Miller's back in the locker room, we might get a second round pick for him.
Yeah.
You never know. So I think the Nuggets made a conscious effort to build a team of guys who want to be in Denver.
Yeah.
And if Moutier is one of those guys, then I think we have a nice squad going forward.
Yeah. It puts you in a position where if Mike Malone gets the pieces to fit, then you have promising players who are either in their prime or before their prime, still developing, at pretty much every position.
I mean,
you've got two good wings who are in their prime. You've got a very promising point guard. You've got a very promising young center. Fareed is a player who he has not yet found his ideal basketball life in the NBA, but we saw, you know, in his little spurt in USA International Ball.
And playing with George Karl was really good for him.
Yeah, there's a good player who's useful in today's NBA there, and even if they're not able to make him fit in this system, that's a player that still has some trade value as well.
The contract looks less ugly.
Yeah.
Before they announced the TV deal, that was looking like one of the worst contracts in the league.
Right.
And now, $12 million. I mean, you look what's happening in Cleveland with Tristan Thompson.
Right.
I mean, he might end up with $18, $19 million a year before it's all said and done for a guy that's, you know, Kenneth Fareed plus 2 inches.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so now he's at 12 and a half. That doesn't look as bad.
Yeah. And Fareed is also a guy who I think is really going to benefit from Mike Malone if they're able to click and get along, because Fareed is one of those players who I think seems like he should be better defensively than he is in today's NBA.
He's quite bad.
Yeah.
He's quite bad defensively, and he's especially bad in one-on-one scenarios. People just if you've got any kind of post-up game, it's a free 2 points.
Right. But and you know what? I wouldn't expect him to turn into someone who is a, you know, an elite post up one-on-one
defender.
No, he's
got to be a scrambler. He's got to be a kind of a havoc maker.
Yeah, and there's a role in today's NBA for a guy like that who can switch and who can help, and he hasn't really done that yet.
Right.
But the athletic tools are there. The energy and motor is there. So if Malone is able to sprinkle a little magic on him and turn him into a plus defensive player, then again, that turns into a pretty good looking contract. And the one area on the roster where, you know, it's not really clear who the long term solution would be is shooting guard. But, you know, Gary Harris.
It's
still
a big year for Gary Harris.
Yeah.
It's kind of a make or break year for Gary Harris, mm-hmm. because coming into that draft, I was very high on him.
Yeah.
I thought he looked like an Eric Gordon kind, like pre knee injury Eric Gordon potential player,
mm-hmm.
and he has just not been able to knock down shots.
Yeah.
So if he comes into this year, because he's going to have an opportunity. I don't think nobody expects Randy Foy to be the guy.
Right.
The door is open. If Gary, there's a couple of swing guys on this team, like whether or not they're going to stay in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Harris, I feel like this is a swing year. I feel like there's a couple of guys kind of drifting on the bottom of the depth chart that are Tim Connelly guys, because
mm-hmm.
one of his assets as a GM is his ability to scout internationally.
Mm.
Nurkic was his guy,
mm-hmm.
and this is the whole reason he's a GM in the league is because of the reputation he garnered by his international scouting.
Yeah.
They're very high on Nikola Jokic.
Mm.
This is a guy that is going to probably supplant Darrell Arthur, who is not good. He's flat out bad.
And not really a center.
No, he shouldn't be on the team.
Yeah.
And then we have this Joffrey Laverne, who they snagged in the second round, who's kind of Gallinari light,
mm-hmm.
and he's better than J.J. Hickson, who is my least favorite player in the league. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of nice pieces here, and
yeah.
I would say that being able to snag those guys on the cheap,
mm-hmm.
the way Connelly does, being able to get Gallinari and Chandler on smart deals that are very movable,
mm-hmm.
if the right opportunity comes around, and with Mike Malone as the coach, who I thought did a very nice job in Sacramento before he was fired for absolutely no reason,
yeah.
and I think Moutier wins Rookie of the Year. I don't know if we win more than 35 games, but all of that looks great to me.
Yeah, it's something to build on. It's hope for the future. And honestly, you know, when you look at the roster and you talk about the guys, everybody is all in on Utah this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So enthusiastic about this young core and how well they played at the end of last year, and this is a sleeper in the West. Honestly, I don't know if I like Utah's roster all that much more than Denver's. You know, in terms of both now and in the future, Gobert is the one difference maker that
yeah.
they have that you don't have the equivalent of here. But you've still got a very nice young center. You've, unlike Utah, you have an answer at point guard where they have a lot of questions.
Well, they'd be in a similar spot if it wasn't for Exum tearing his knee.
Right.
That's maybe the most heartbreaking injury, because that's what made them really interesting.
Yeah.
So if Moutier doesn't do that, then yeah, we've got the edge there, because they're kind of equivalents.
Yeah. But, you know, and then you've got, you know, the wing players that you have on very reasonable deals, you know, I think compare favorably with Gordon Hayward, you know.
Making an extra $5-6 million a year.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I actually think that the Nuggets are, I agree that maybe 35 wins is realistically their upside, but I think that it'll be a fun 35 wins. I think people will enjoy watching them. And I think that they're going to be a team that, you know, people get excited about as soon as next season.
Yeah.
I think you can reasonably expect this team to start sniffing, you know, the back end of the Western Conference playoffs. And then you just hope that one of these guys, most likely Moutier, takes the leap into being, you know, a truly elite John Wall type player.
And doesn't leave. Yeah, we have to sell him on this, and I feel like we have the core to sell him on this.
There you go.
I mean, if he doesn't pan out as being like a borderline all-star kind of guy, then we have to start over again.
Yeah, and that's how the NBA works.
Yep.
So the eggs are in the Moutier basket, and you know what? You could find a worse basket.
I'm all on board. These are the kind of seasons I like, where there's really no pressure.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm in. We move over to the Eastern Conference with the Detroit Pistons, who have real expectations after mm-hmm. trying. They were kind of in that fun spot, sort of, after they jettisoned Josh Smith.
Mm-hmm.
There were no real expectations, and they were just kind of going out there playing basketball.
Yeah.
But now this is year two of Stan Van Gundy running the whole ship.
Yeah.
And I think they're expecting sixth seed or something. What do you think about their chances to improve that much this season?
I think that they are the hardest team to predict, maybe in the entire league for me. And there are a few reasons for that. I think one is that, you know, Stan Van Gundy obviously has a terrific track record. He's unquestionably a great coach.
He's a top five X's and O's game coach.
And you can see, if you squint, you can see the pieces of how he's trying to build something very similar to the recipe for success that he had in Orlando, where Andre Drummond is playing the Dwight Howard role, mm-hmm. and then you surround him with shooters and with guys that are going to be able to complement him in ways that are similar to how those pieces. I mean, bringing in Ilyasova
as your Hedo Turkoglu,
Slash Rashard Lewis,
but they don't have both.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of what made Orlando so devastating.
Yeah. But then, you know, they make the trade for Morris the Lesser.
Yep. They really, really make his brother mad.
Yeah.
I mean, but that trade might have ruined the Phoenix Suns for the next 5 years.
Although he seemed very happy in media day, so who knows?
No, he's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Markeef, he's still poisoning that whole deal behind the scenes.
And then, you know, they bring in Stanley Johnson.
Who we both like.
I think that the key for him, you know, is he going to be able to consistently hit that outside shot?
Right.
If so, then he's got a real role here. They're really investing a lot in Reggie Jackson, which I'm a little bit more concerned about. But
he was awesome when he made his way over there. I mean, it more or less looked like he was, how do we put this? Oh, no, he was tanking it in Oklahoma City. I mean, whatever happened there personality-wise had gone beyond the point of no return.
Yeah.
And when they made the deal with Brandon Jennings tearing the ACL, or not the ACL, the Achilles.
Achilles, yeah.
Yeah, that's even worse. So when they made the deal, Reggie Jackson played like a house of fire. It was like 20-12 every night. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was getting into the paint, doing the Reggie Jackson thing, but I'm not a fan either.
Yeah.
What do they have him for? $80 million now?
I think that was the deal.
I mean, they're all in on him.
Yeah, it was 4 years, $80 million,
I think. That was a lot of money.
Something like that. Yeah, a lot of money. And Brandon Jennings is still on this roster.
Right.
And that's, to me, a concern. I don't know
how... You can't play them both.
You can't play them both. Brandon Jennings does not have a history of being someone who's just a good sport about, like, oh, I'll do whatever I need to do for the team.
Neither is Reggie Jackson.
Right.
That's a bad combination.
Yeah, so that worries me. And then a lot of question marks at shooting guard. I don't know if KCP is a player. I know he is a person, I guess. Yeah. I'm not sure if he's really a long-term solution there.
It's kind of a Ben McLemore. You know, there's these guys that really profile as being these long, athletic, rangy, 25-foot range on the jumper shooting guards.
Yeah.
And you just don't know if they can do it every night.
You know who'd look really nice in that spot?
Who's that?
Brandon Knight.
Oh, yeah.
If only the Pistons had
if only.
Brandon Knight. That would be...
Play him right alongside one of these guys, have this kind of dual point guard attack. But
yeah, and you know, there you go. That was a deal that at the time when they made that Jennings trade, mm-hmm. that it seemed like that the Pistons were getting the higher upside player.
Yes.
And, you know, taking a little bit of a risk with the personality, but that, you know, you got a chance to get a really talented point guard. And Brandon Knight at the time, nobody really knew, is he going to be a starter?
Yeah, he's kind of a bad tweener.
Yeah. Well, now he signed his own very, very expensive deal.
Yeah.
Had a very productive year last year, is a very good shooter, would fit in the system much better than Brandon Jennings. But anyway, I mean, the long-winded answer, though, is... I don't know whether this team yet has the pieces. I think that they are getting there. They have more Stan Van Gundy guys than they did last year. I still don't think this is going to be a very good defensive team, though, because I don't think Drummond is at that Dwight Howard level defensively, and that's the difference.
His defensive case comes in numbers. Like,
right.
he compiles blocks and rebounds.
Sure.
But you actually watch the games, and the snap rotation... He makes up for a lot of lags in picking up where the guy is going, but because of how athletic he is.
Yeah.
And I'm just not sure that he's picking up on the nuances quite as quickly as you would hope he would for a guy that's anchoring your defense.
Yeah.
And that's why they spent a lot of money on Aaron Baines. They spent a lot of money on Aaron Baines.
Yeah. They also spent a not zero sum of money on Joel Anthony.
That's true.
They really, you know, they spent for a team that that has, you know, their solution at starting center. It was interesting that they went out and spent, you know, a combined, you know, $9 million or so on their backup centers, which again, in today's NBA, that's not an insane amount of money to spend, but it means that all in all, you know, once Drummond is able to get, you know, locked up on a long-term deal, that you'll consistently have $30 million or so plus tied up in your center position. And that's a lot of money.
Yeah, and it's, I think they went and got Baines because he's about like a 79% free throw shooter.
Yeah.
And there are going to be times where Andre Drummond can't be on the floor.
Yeah.
Just cannot play.
Right.
And that's trouble.
Yeah.
This is the franchise guy, and he's still hovering in the, what, 30s to 40s at the line?
Yeah, I mean, last year, let's see, he was at 38%.
That's not good enough.
That is not
that's good not, enough. I mean, that's a disaster for somebody that is playing 10 to 15 minutes a night.
Yeah.
You know, that's a disaster for somebody that, because when it's your franchise guy,
mm-hmm.
when it's your all-in, number one priority man, that is going to get fouled off the floor in games, yep. and you're forced to spend $6 to $7 million on his backup.
Yeah,
man, that's trouble.
And it basically it means that, you know, for three possessions or so out of the game, because he's shooting, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of five free throws a game, for, you know, those three possessions of the game, you know, you're scoring at a rate that would be by far the worst mm-hmm. in the league.
Yeah,
and. You know, in crunch time, as you said, you can't rely on him to be out there. So all of a sudden, you know, you're relying to the extent that their defense is supposed to be predicated on the assumption that Andre Drummond is the linchpin mm-hmm. and he covers up a lot of their other weaknesses. Well, now you're in crunch time. You've lost that linchpin. Your defense, you've lost your defensive identity.
And you've built your whole team around him. Like,
right.
These are supposed to be complementary pieces to the franchise guy.
Right.
And he can't play those last 4 minutes.
Yeah. And there's not, I don't think there's another guy on the roster. I mean, your only other option is just Reggie Jackson isolation, I guess.
Which is what they're going to do.
Yeah. And I don't like that. Yeah. I don't think that's a productive
that's
use
fine
of offense.
When you're winning 30 games.
Sure.
And if the goal is to win 45, I think they're shooting for about four, like mid to high 40s, mm-hmm. I think is what they would realistically say is the ceiling for this team.
Yeah.
That means good teams are going to look at fouling Drummond in the second quarter.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to look at ways that they... You don't go to hack a Drummond when it's not really a threat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just kind of try to get through that game.
Yeah.
But if this is a team that has playoff aspirations, teams are going to game plan you differently.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they have the supplementary pieces to really get over that hump. I think they're going to fight for that playoff spot just because they're very athletic, very well coached,
mm-hmm.
and there are more good guys than just the starters. Because I do think Anthony Tolliver's a nice piece.
Mm-hmm.
I do think Jody Meeks is a nice player. I mean, they got a lot of dudes here
yeah.
who can really get it done. I just wonder if they're going to be able to get it done against some of the better teams when they have a little more elevated profile.
Right.
So like I would hang in the high I would say 38 to 41.
Yeah, I mean I think that's probably about right. I don't think that's enough to sneak into the playoffs. I think they're still going to be on the outside looking in this
they're
year.
They're going to be like right there with the Celtics and those teams that are kind of fight scrapping for those last couple seeds. But I think this is going to be a team that has a tough time winning games that are like tough. 4 point either way kind of games.
Yeah. The concern that I have about Drummond is that, you know, this is a year where, as you said, there are different expectations. I do think that teams are, you know, if the Pistons are any good, the teams will be more willing to go into sort of the hack of Drummond early.
Mm-hmm.
And the question that I have is if he does not come into this year as an improved free throw shooter, how much does that, infiltrate and poison the rest of his game.
Absolutely.
Because the classic example, obviously, is Andres Biedrins,
mm-hmm.
who...
He was a nice player.
At 21 years old, 22 years old, you know, was a double-double guy who was one of the most efficient offensive players in the league and looked like he was going to be a foundational player for the Warriors. Mm-hmm. You know, that was not a crazy thing to think that he was going to be a really, really good young player who was maybe even, you know, an all-star level contender when you're looking at a guy who's averaging, you know, 12 and 12 as a 22-year-old on, you know, near league-leading field goal percentage. I mean, that's a nice player. And then, you know, his free throw shooting, I will never understand exactly what happened, but it just completely fell apart and he became unplayable. And from his, you know, from 23 on, he, you know, basically he fell from being a starting level player to being a out of the league by the time that he was 27 years old because his free throw shooting just destroyed everything around
couldn't touch
game.
The ball anymore.
Couldn't touch the ball, lost all of his confidence. You know, Andre Drummond is somebody who is not necessarily known as having like a rock solid constitution. I mean, he's not an unflappable guy.
Right.
So I worry that that could be something that impacts his assertiveness, that, you know, that he does avoid the ball. I'm hoping, because he's a fun player and the league is better when players like him are good, that he comes in the year, he's able to shoot 55%. From the free throw line and stay out there, and that we have an interesting, fun Stan Van Gundy team. But I don't like this team. I think it's a good argument for why your GM shouldn't be your coach. And I think that if they're better this year, it's not in a way that really moves the needle.
But there is a team that we're going to talk about now who seems to have it all figured out. The Golden State Warriors are your defending National Basketball Association champions. They bring everyone back except for David Lee, who was, what, the 10th man?
If that. Yeah.
I mean, in his place is Jason Thompson. And he's nice.
Yeah.
And then they also have everyone else. You remember the guys? Steph Curry, Draymond Green? You know, this team that won the title.
Head coach Luke Walton?
Head coach Luke Walton. This is the big difference, and this matters. Because what did they win last year? 65?
Yeah, 65, 66, somewhere in that
67.
Range. 67. Wow.
They were 67 and 15 with the one of the best point differentials in years.
Yeah.
And it's hard to go do that again. So I think just by virtue of the fact that they had an all-time historic season last year, I think they win a few less. Mm-hmm. But does that mean that they're not a title contender again this year? No, they're going to be right there.
Yeah.
So when you look at this squad, do you think they have it in them to repeat with this bullseye on everyone's back?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's really hard to repeat.
Very hard. And everything went right for them last year.
Yeah, and this year, you know, there are going to be injuries that didn't happen last year.
And other guys will stay healthy that got hurt against them.
Right, yeah. So, you know, even if they play as well this year as they did last year, which is a reasonable assumption, I still agree that it's, I don't think that we should project 67 wins because that's historic.
Yeah. And the NBA is really good.
Yeah. And the West is really good.
It's
and
incredible.
And the best teams in the West all got better.
Yep.
Every one of them. So, you know, I think that it's crazy to overlook this team as a title contender. I think that, frankly, it's sort of insulting to pick anyone else as the favorite, given how dominant they were last year and that their best players are all still on the right end of their prime and reasonably can be expected to improve. Their coaching staff, as great as it was last year, still consisted of a rookie head coach, and you know, they really will benefit, I think, from Steve Kerr having a full season and going through the playoffs under his belt. And it's not that he really needed that experience because he was obviously great out of the bat, but he's a very smart guy, and I'm sure that he's learned from that and will be even better this year. So, I mean, technically, I think they'll have a worse record, but they will be right there at the end.
Yeah.
You mentioned Jason Thompson before. Imagine what Jason Thompson feels like in training camp right now. This is a guy who spent 7 years with the Kings.
Yes.
And I don't know, have in front of me what his record was during those years, but there can't be any year.
More losses than wins.
There can't be a year when they had more than 34 wins.
No, he's
right?
never been in a successful operation. Never once.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I don't think he won in college either.
Where, I don't even remember where he went. Oh, he went to Ryder.
Yeah, he's a mid-major kid.
Yeah. So this is a 29-year-old player who spent his entire basketball life on the Kings.
During
the worst stretch in the Kings' history, too, because he came on board right as they were getting terrible, I guess.
Yeah.
Right? 08, 09. I mean, I have to go back and take a look, but he missed the glory days. You know, he was not hanging out with you know...
No, he wasn't with Mike Bibby and Vlade, Chris Webber.
And Peja, yeah. The good Peja. He was with the bad Peja. But,
right.
But yeah, so Jason Thompson, he's got to be in absolute heaven. And this is, I just wish there was like an NBA TV show, just half an hour a week, just checking in with Jason Thompson. Like, what are the things that he's learned this season about how good NBA teams function?
Yeah, just in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, he's going to be shocked. There'll be so many revelations for him, I think.
Yeah.
Just of the process of like what it's like to play with teammates who care about you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and smart, engaged coaches and a front office that's not shooting itself in the foot. And, oh, I just feel great for him because he's a nice player, too. Yeah. He's always been a good player. He's just been stuck on terrible teams.
No, he's all right. You know, this is a good spot to be, right behind Draymond Green, kind of just getting to chip in to a winning effort every single day.
Yeah.
And he also might play because one of the things you worry about with this team is Andrew Bogut, whether or not he is going to make it through. You're not expecting 82. You want 60.
Yeah.
And these are the little areas that, you know, they might not be able to replicate last year because Bogut was able to give them kind of maximum Bogut.
Yeah.
Except for what was the playoff series where he just really, struggled against Houston and he really struggled against Cleveland.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was because he was really important early on and then
they needed him for Memphis.
Yeah. They needed him desperately for that series. But
then they also have Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Harrison Barnes, Andre Iguodala, Draymond Green. I mean, you just on and on and on and on. This team is loaded.
Yep.
I think that the coaching thing is kind of a big deal. Kerr is going to miss. It's undetermined because he was basically falling apart in the finals, it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
He slipped a disc in game 5 and really couldn't stand anymore.
Yeah.
And the grind of the year really got to him. So he finally got this back surgery. We have no idea what Luke Walton's going to be. I mean, they're just going to, it's steering the ship. It's, you know, straight on. Don't rock the boat.
Right.
Well, this is Luke Walton. We know who this guy is. We've seen this guy around town before. This is Luke Walton. That's silly. That guy's head coach of a defending NBA champion.
I know. It just feels, and you know, he's got a really good reputation around the league.
Oh, for sure.
And I always loved Luke Walton as a player, and he was always a very smart player. His personality is such that it's still hard for me to wrap my mind around taking him seriously as a head coach. But that being said, I mean, you probably saw. So Steve Kerr has the back surgery. They come out and they announce he's out indefinitely, no timetable for his return. And he's back at practice the next day with Steve Nash begging him, like, go home.
Yeah.
I've been down this road before. You need to leave now. Hopefully he will be back, if not by the beginning of the regular season, very soon thereafter.
Yeah, he'll be fine. But that's kind of the fun thing to talk about. The actual thing they're going to miss is Alvin Gentry.
Yeah.
That's a real loss.
Yep.
And I think he's going to be a major reason why the Pelicans are going to maybe be in the mix with like Memphis and them in the middle of the conference, because I think he's a great coach.
Yep.
And I think he got a raw deal in Phoenix, kind of the same raw deal that Mike Malone got.
Yeah.
I don't know why Alvin Gentry's still not the coach in Phoenix.
Right.
That guy was great.
Yeah.
And losing...
And players love to play for him.
And he was probably the most overqualified assistant out of anybody. And that was kind of an underrated thing with the Warriors, was all up and down the bench with Gentry and Ron Adams. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is just a stacked team, not just their roster, but their coaching staff.
Yeah.
And they have an ownership that likes to spend, and they have fans that show up to get, I mean, this, they've got it. They're good.
Yeah.
But they're third in terms of the NBA title odds right now. You know that?
That's crazy and stupid, frankly.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, because they were historically great last year.
Yes.
You know, not just, oh, this was a nice team. I mean, they were maybe one of the 10 best teams ever last year.
And this isn't a team that is, I think they're kind of protected against losing streaks.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see how all these guys go cold for like 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
Like if Steph Curry can't hit, you know, 27 footers with hands in his face, they can go run the second thing and go get easy buckets.
Mm-hmm.
If there are causes for concern in terms of the roster, in terms of the guys on the floor, is Andre Iguodala still cool coming off the bench?
Mm-hmm.
Is Harrison Barnes playing for a contract? What's going to happen there? Because he's an interesting case next summer for what kind of money he's going to get paid.
Yep.
Draymond got paid. Does Draymond show up at 310 pounds?
Mm.
I mean, it could happen. Probably won't, but it could. His isn't a game. He feels like a kind of guy like Terrell Davis. you know, where he burns bright, and when it goes fast. So there's a lot of things here. And, I mean, is Klay Thompson, there were kind of some ups and downs, peaks and valleys with Klay Thompson a little bit. I think this is nitpicking. I think they still win 60, and I still think they're the number one seed, and I still think the road to the title goes through them.
Yeah, and the thing is, as well, is that they've got reinforcements, even guys who last year didn't play major roles, mm-hmm. who are still promising players that they expect more out of. I mean, I think James Michael McAdoo is a guy who barely played last year. There's not really a clear role for him on this year's team, but I know they're very high on him.
Yeah.
He was very productive in the time that he did play.
Kevon Looney's a nice pick.
Yeah, who they can take slowly. I mean, he's had the hip surgery, so they don't expect much from him. But they've got players, even at the back end of their roster, so that, you know, they won't be as healthy as they were last year. But as long as you're not losing Steph Curry for 45 games,
right?
You know, they've got players who can step up and fill in a good chunk of the production that they miss, and they'll manage the minutes smartly as well, so that, you know, they'll be less likely, I think, to suffer injuries than
a team. It's a huge reason why they stayed healthy.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't overtax anybody.
Yeah. So we love the Warriors. They're going to have a great season, and, you know, it's more fun and sexy to pick someone else to be the favorites, but I still think they're the favorites.
So. Easily. I think they're the clear favorites.
Yeah.
And we're going to go now to a team that gave them a pretty good run for their money in the conference finals, the Houston Rockets, who did get better.
Yes.
They have Ty Lawson, who we talked about a little bit, ruining the Denver Nuggets, but he's going to come over here and not be relied on to be the guy. He's the secondary ball handler.
Mm-hmm.
And when Houston ran into trouble last year, it was because James Harden had to do literally everything on offense.
Yeah.
And it almost won him the MVP. He came very close to winning the MVP, and you can make a very good case for him as the MVP because nobody had to do more.
Yeah.
But I think that having a guy that can handle the ball alongside him is going to unlock the rest of that Oklahoma City portion of his game, where he could catch and shoot a little bit, and, you know, he would catch a guy on a switch or somebody on a slow rotation. I mean, this is going to make their offense really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it means that they're going to win more than, what did they win last year, 56? They were the 2 seed, but they also had Dwight Howard miss a good chunk of the season.
Right.
I think 56 is, again, about right.
Yeah. I think that this is a team that is better positioned for the playoffs than they were last year because they have more options. I think that in the playoffs, you know, having the versatility to play a couple different styles is really important. And they really only had one option, as you said, on offense. So I think that will help them. But I also think that, you know, frankly, people did not expect them to win as many games in the regular season as they did last year. You could say that they sort of overachieved to some extent.
In large part because Harden played way better than even the biggest James Harden fan could expect him to play.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, in the playoffs, Dwight Howard was closer to the Dwight Howard of old than we've seen in a long time. But I don't think it's reasonable to expect that you're going to get 82 games of that.
But can they manage it a little better?
The question then is, if they manage it better, what does that mean rotation-wise? Because they still, Clint Capela is the only other center on the roster.
I think you play small with Monta Ūdens at the 5.
Yeah.
I think that dude's a player. And I think that was an underrated loss for them in the playoffs. Not having Monta Ūdens, who, I mean, if you look at the numbers, he's one of the league's best post-up scorers. I mean, you wouldn't think it, but you give him the ball within 8 feet, he's just, because he's got a million moves.
Right.
He's so crafty, and he's a really good shooter out to even the corner three.
Mm-hmm.
He's a nice player, and I think that bringing him back is not the same in terms of notoriety as bringing in Ty Lawson, but I think the impact is just as strong because he can play both the 4 and the 5.
Yeah.
You don't want him playing the 5 all the time, but I think you can reduce Dwight's minutes if you want to try to go small a little bit, spread the floor, and just have Lawson. You can even go Lawson, Beverly Harden, and then Jones, Monta Ūdens, or Ariza, Monta Ūdens. And that's a really hard lineup to guard.
Yeah.
I think bringing back Monta Ūdens and not Denver not getting Monta Ūdens in the Lawson deal just breaks my heart because I had my heart set on getting him back, at least Terrence Jones.
Yeah.
But not being able to get either of them,
Oh,
that makes me mad. Anyway, I don't even want to talk about it anymore. I like this team. I like this Ariza-Brewer combo at small forward. I don't think we see Sam Decker play much this year, but I think the plan there is a Chandler Parsons-esque 3-4 kind of swing guy.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what the role they envision for him eventually. I think that Marcus Thornton is kind of an interesting heat check guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Beverly being back, being the pest defensively, kind of covers up what Lawson is unable to do.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if people remember Steph Curry jumping a level against Ty Lawson. It was Ty Lawson that brought Steph Curry from, oh, he's a nice shooter, to, well, this is one of the best guys in the league.
Right.
He did it to Ty Lawson.
Yep.
This was, I think we talked, I don't remember the team we talked about this with. I think it was the Hawks. But when you have Ty Lawson, that's somebody you can pick at in a 7-game series. Mm. Because he's good enough to stay on the floor offensively, but he really has a hard time guarding anybody.
Yes.
Patrick Beverley can guard everybody. And him not being out there to chase Curry around made a difference in that series. Really
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
So if this team can stay even reasonably healthy, because I think it's underrated how much time they missed from key guys. Because the Warriors didn't withstand any kind of the injuries that the Rockets did.
Mm-hmm.
Harden just plowed through. He just put them all on his back and just kept chugging. If they're able to get even 50% more contributions from each of these guys, man, this is a quiet contender. I really think so.
I think there's no question there's a contender. I think that I was looking at the odds, and I'm not a gambler. I will say this right now. I know very little about gambling and which books to use and all that.
What's value and how to bet. Yeah.
Yeah. But when you just look at it, what I do know how to do, though, is to look at things in relation to each other. And I'm looking at least for one of the books, what their future odds are right now. And they've got Cleveland 5-2. They've got San Antonio 7-2. Golden State 11-2. As you had mentioned, they were, you know, third. The Thunder at 17-2. Clippers 12-1. Bulls 20-1. And then finally the Rockets at 22-1.
That's insane.
That's gambling is illegal, folks. But if it weren't, that would be a really good bet.
What this book is saying, if you run the NBA season 22 times, the Rockets win once. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, if you replayed this upcoming NBA season 22 different times with 22 different injury scenarios, this, that, and the Rockets are way better than that.
Yeah.
I would have the Rockets right there with the Thunder because yeah. I think there are just as many unanswered questions. I mean, I like the Thunder more if they're healthy, obviously. But, I mean, I don't like them more than I like the Clippers, who they beat last year.
Right.
I definitely don't like the Bulls more.
Right.
I mean,
right.
This is crazy.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that the Rockets are right up in there. I would not be shocked if they were the 2 seed again. I honestly, I wouldn't even be shocked if they were the 1 seed.
Totally.
They have the talent. So this is a team that's going to be in there in the end. And with the West, it's going to come down to matchups and who's healthy in the playoffs. But I would not, I would not at all be surprised if the Rockets make it out of the West. This is a very, very good team. Their best player is one of the 3 best players in the league, probably. And
he's got a lot of shoes right now.
Yeah.
You see that photo with him in the truck of shoes?
I did see that. Those were a lot of shoes. Yeah.
That's a pretty silly thing that happened, but yeah. I think we're kind of on board with these last 4 teams. We're locking in here, so we've got 4 more teams coming up after the break. Up next on Can't Wait, we're going to talk about the Pacers, Clippers, Lakers, and Grizzlies. Stick around.